The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Today on Football Weekly Extra, playoffs, broken hearts in Stockholm as Ron rains on their parade, while in Paris, France parade on their Ukraine. We salute the Didi boys and his pert and preening Ronness and say 32 teams, 8 former winners, game on World Cup. Elsewhere, England take on Germany, and the two sides not as far apart as you'd think. Yogi's men taking the tube to Wembley, while England also continue to go down it. There's other international stuff, and then boom, league football is back with whopping fixtures like the Merseyside Derby, Stoke Sunderland, Arsenal Saints, and Der Klassiker. Everything you need to know about all of that and more with Post and Tweets 2 in today's Football Weekly Extra. Well, everybody, these are exciting times in football. A terrific lineup for the World Cup. It's all sorted, and a pretty special lineup as well for this edition of Football Weekly Extra. Barry Glendenning's here.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Raphael Honigstein off Proper TV.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello. Hey. Hello. And Paul McInnes.
Hello there.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very
Great.
Much.
Great. Yeah. Great news. Wow. 8 former winners in this. It just looks like a great lineup of teams, doesn't it, Paul?
It does look like a great lineup of teams, and it came to a climax in a way that...
Don't you think? No, Raphael's shaking his head at me.
What teams did you expect at the World Cup?
I don't know.
Just out of interest.
Wow, there's 8 former winners.
You could have had Ukraine, which just instantly saps the enthusiasm.
What's this?
If you had Ukraine in there, it would instantly sap the enthusiasm.
And it was a great night of playoff drama on Tuesday, and maybe that's why I'm... Oof,
24 teams who aren't good enough to win it, never have been.
How would you know it was a great night?
You're making reference to the fact that I chose to watch Tuesday's drama on Wednesday, which is interesting because you chose to come for Thursday's pod on Wednesday. What was that about?
Where were you, all of you?
Raphael Honigstein, as you tweeted, you turned up a day early for the podcast. That's how enthusiastic you are about talking about this.
So eager.
Yeah.
But I have an excuse of sorts.
Go on.
It's just hardwired into my brain that the day after international week is Thursday, which unfortunately wasn't, because they've changed the system.
Is it hardwired or is it social conditioning?
Well, I spent a large proportion of Wednesday thinking it was Thursday.
There you go.
Purely because there had been international football
the previous
night.
I came here to talk about how excited I am about the World Cup, not what day of the week it is.
Okay.
What day is it?
Barry, are you excited?
Not yet, no. Okay. I was at Yogi Löw's press conference on Monday, and he made the interesting point that he was asked, I think, what it's like, you know, the pressure of being among the favourites for the World Cup. And he said, well, I can't even talk to my players about the World Cup yet because they've more important things to worry about at the moment, such as, you know, the Bundesliga and the German Cup and the Champions League and whatever, you know, pertinent domestic competitions they're involved in. So it's pointless even mentioning the World Cup to them because it's just way too early.
Oh, how very practical.
Meanwhile, the English press apparently managed to solicit Roy Hodgson's preliminary 30, which he's going to name next May, but is listed in all the papers this morning.
Really?
So, yeah.
Any surprises in there, Paul?
Absolutely no surprises. He says there's not going to be any late contenders.
Is Ravel Morrison in there after his wonder goal in training for the under-21s?
It was some. He did hit that with a pelter.
Oh, extraordinary. The one where he kind of... He does a back heel even though he's running forward.
Yeah, and spinning sideways.
And spinning sideways.
Did he really say there won't be any surprises?
Well, that's what he's been quoted as saying, whether that's the full...
Mind games.
Well, he couldn't say there will be, because otherwise there won't.
One man who is excited, by the way, about next summer's World Cup, Julien Laurent, who went from despair to delight in the course of only, thinking hard, 5 days. Friday in Ukraine, he was there to watch his Bleus tumble to a 2-0 defeat. And everyone said they wouldn't come back against Ukraine at the Stade de France.
Except Yogi Löw.
Except Yogi. Did he say that?
He said he was confident that they'd turn it around.
All right, and they did turn it around.
I thought, he's mad.
All right. Well, there you go.
Shows what I know.
Anyway, let's now hear from Julien. Oh, yeah, Julien.
Hello.
Hello. Where in the wide world of international football are you, Julien?
In London.
Ah, super. Because you've been all over the shop, you know, not just geographically, you've been to Ukraine and to Paris, but also in an emotional sense, you've really been from one end of the scale to the other. What happened? What did Didi do to this French side in between Ukraine and this return match?
He did a lot of things. I mean, to be fair, he started by getting completely wrong for the first leg in Ukraine. Team selection was bad, coaching was bad, everything was bad, and he had to make the right call for the second leg, and he did that. He changed the tactical system, going from a 4-2-3-1 that clearly didn't work in Kiev to a 4-3-3 formation that was much more balanced, with Kabay in the holding midfielder role. And he changed the men as well, you know, five changes compared to the first team that played in Kiev, with the second one that played in Paris on Tuesday. Benzema started, Valbuena started, Kabay started, Varane and Sako at the back, and it was just, he did everything right, to be fair, and it was the perfect game, but he had to change everything like he did, because he got it so wrong in the first leg.
Right, he did everything right and the linesman got something crucial wrong, and that's how France gets to the World Cup, yeah?
Well, the linesman got one thing right wrong and one thing wrong right.
Ah, did he? Okay.
The Benzema scored initially a very good goal that was ruled out for offside when he was onside. And 4 minutes later, Benzema again scored a goal that was blatantly offside, but the linesman didn't flag it up. So it looked like very much a compensation goal, I have to say. They must have realised that they made a big mistake on the first one that they ruled out, and then allowed the second one that should have been ruled out.
Julian, Deschamps dropped some big-name players for the return leg. Do you think that was a very brave decision, or was he left with very little choice?
Yeah, no, I think he made the obvious choices. To be fair, we were all surprised initially when he benched Valbuena and started with Najri. And Najri obviously has a very rocky story with the national team since a very young age. And obviously for a year, Deschamps never called him up, then called him back last summer, and he was injured, didn't go in the tour we had in South America. Then he called him back in August, and then he played a little bit through August, September, October, but no one expected him to start such a massive game in Ukraine. And Najri was so bad, but I mean so, so bad, that there was no way he could have started again on Tuesday. So then Valbuena became the obvious choice. At the back, Koscielny was sent off in Ukraine, so obviously someone had to come in. And Abidal was shambolic in Ukraine, and clearly at 34 years of age, he couldn't have played two games in a row in the current form he has. So again, it was quite obvious that Sako would come in with Varane. And then Kabay, even Kabay thought he would play the first leg on Monday. The Monday before the first leg, Deschamps went to him and said, "Where would you want to play? What would be your best position for Friday?" And Kabay said, "Well, I love to play in that holding midfield role if we play in 4-3-3." And Kabay thought, "Great, I'm going to start that game." He even played the training behind closed door the night before the game, and where Deschamps played the starting 11 against the substitutes. And Kabay played with the starting 11, and then the next day he was on the bench. So I think everything that he changed, all the new players, was just obvious.
All right. At the stadium, at the Stade de France on Tuesday there, Julien, when the game began, did the crowd believe?
I think, I think from even before the players got on, what was interesting is that usually, you know, when the players arrive to the stadium, substitutes and starters usually go on the pitch, you know, to see how the grass is, if it's a bit wet, whatever. Something the Ukrainian players did, for example. But for France, only a few of the serbs, only five or six serbs, went actually to recognize the pitch, see everything. Everybody else stayed in, like if they were, so, you know, to keep the pressure in, to keep everybody together. And I think the fans, when they saw that the main players stayed in, I think that bought them even more incentive to make some noise for then when they came out to warm up and all of that. And the atmosphere was incredible. Even in 98, when we won the World Cup, I didn't see anything similar to what happened on Tuesday night.
Right. Well, people, as we saw on TV, people out in the streets of Paris celebrating. Most of them were Algerian, but you know, still, it was nice to see a bit of atmosphere there.
Yeah. I mean, on the same night, Portugal, Algeria, and France qualified. And obviously, the Portuguese and the Algerian are two massive communities in France, you know, historically as well. So everybody just went out together. And there's so many half French, half Portuguese, half Algerian, half French in France that everybody just partied all together. And it'd be really good to have those three countries in the World Cup together.
Right. Brilliant stuff, Julian. Very well
Thank
done.
You guys.
We'll speak to you again soon.
I hope so.
Moving
does
on.
Does Auclair know we're seeing another Frenchman behind
well,
his back?
Well, Julien was there at those two games. Just wanted to get a little bit of that first-person perspective on those two matches.
The French are quite relaxed when it comes to...
that is true.
These sort of arrangements. Yeah.
I noticed actually after that game, Didier Deschamps said, and I quote, "It's a bit of a tradition that when French teams have their backs to the wall, they perform."
Yeah.
Is that
it? Right? I don't know.
I would have thought the exact opposite was true.
Well
perhaps their World Cup run in 2006 was when everybody wrote them off.
No, I think what he's referring to is that France have really struggled in almost every qualification, I think, since...
Ginola and Cantona.
Mm. 98 they were okay, but after that,
yeah,
probably.
98 didn't have to qualify. I'll take that again. I think what he's referring to is that France have really struggled in recent qualification rounds
right.
and sometimes needed to scrape.
A helping hand, let's say, diplomatically. And of course, we all saw Golacho Ten posting in with the French weather girl who had promised to present the weather naked. If France did it, and then she was tweeting during the game, going, "Sacrebleu, I'm getting tense." Did you see her naked weather report?
Yes.
It's disappointing, I think.
Well,
in what way?
Because well,
are you objectifying women again, James?
What, no, I'm not.
It's going to be 15 degrees. What do you mean?
If a man or a woman says they're going to present the weather naked, and then what
She's
they actually
not.
Do is... No, what she did was they made a video of her out in the countryside, or supposedly her, a woman running around naked through the fields with her back to camera. From a significant distance, I'm thinking about maybe 50 yards away, you could see there's a figure running naked through the fields, cavorting.
Oh.
And her weather report was kind of voiced over the top of this.
But
so not what it said on the tin
well,
at all.
Didn't she sort of do it on a technicality because it was in a village, the name of which translates into the nude. So technically she presented the weather... in the nude.
That's brilliant, isn't it?
I tell
you what, though, if any of us promise to do a podcast naked, you know, if our team wins the World Cup or anything like that, I'm pretty sure we'd go right through with it. We wouldn't resort to any cavils or
absolutely not. Absolutely not. We'd stick to our word and be incredibly brave on this audio-only format.
Paul, of course, you've got previous in terms of doing stuff naked.
Yeah, I once investigated a bunch of naturists
on
a Norfolk beach.
What did you discover?
I discovered that my genitals shrink even smaller than normal in cold climates.
All right.
Oh, didn't you run into the sea?
I ran into the sea as the climactic shot. Yeah.
Right. Cool. I wonder how climactic that
Jimbo,
shot was.
Stop banging your pen off the table.
Sorry. I know. Sorry, listeners.
You two are increasingly like an old married couple. You know, aren't you?
Good. Well, anyway, that was France. And if that wasn't enough drama for you, how about Sweden-Portugal? The World Cup will do well to match that for a bit of international football, eh?
It was very
Clearly,
good.
I was at a concert
it was
at the
very...
time, but what did you say?
It was very good, especially if you compare it to the first leg, which really was actually fairly entertaining, but so low on real quality that I thought, you know, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world to miss out on both of these teams, but... Portugal, of course, have more class, and they've got Cristiano Ronaldo in the mood. And he did his thing.
He did. A quick nod. We have to say, it's not just Ronaldo. Mucinho's assists were amazing, and they really were.
Yeah.
But now let's go crazy about Ronaldo. Well done to The Guardian, which was the only English paper yesterday that didn't have England-Germany on its back page. It went with a warning to the world with a big picture of CR7.
I don't know.
Is it 1.12 goals per game?
Is that right?
This calendar year.
Well, there's so many. Let's have a look at some Ronaldo stats because they're crazy. 1 minute and 51 seconds between his second and third goals. 64, 65 and 66. Those are his goals of 2013 that put Sweden out. And in fact, goals in 2013, Man United has scored 54, Chelsea 54, Man City 56, Arsenal 58, Liverpool 61. Cristiano Ronaldo on his own, 64. I love that moment after Zlatan scored his second, and it was Sweden 2-1, and on the verge of pulling it off, when Ronaldo just bends down and relaces his boots. Time to go to work.
And then that was the best finish as well, the second one. Mm. It was like a laser in the corner.
The corner.
I've read that Zlatan actually applauded Ronaldo when he scored his third goal.
Go on, Rafa.
No, that's what
you've seen the footage.
I haven't seen.
I think it's a nice gesture if that's what he meant. But certainly after the second Ronaldo goal, you could see him applauding. But he's certainly clapping his hands. But I'm not sure if it's entirely clear whether he's going, "Come on, boys, we're still in this."
He was summoning his manservant.
Servants.
Didn't he say afterwards as well that the World Cup without him?
Got the image of Zlatan's manservant in my head.
wouldn't be. Is he wearing a fez by any chance?
Right. Sorry, go on.
Didn't Zlatan say afterwards as well that a World Cup without him in it wouldn't be worth watching?
Yeah. Of course he said that.
Yeah. I'd applaud him for that.
He verges into self-parody, and I think quite knowingly so. Mm. I think it's reached a point where he's just playing to the gallery. Whereas our friend Cristiano Ronaldo, I think, is slightly of a different disposition. And I think there was an interesting piece in Süddeutsche, which I read today, which said he is obviously a phenomenon, but has there ever been a more unpopular best player in the world? Probably not.
I don't know. I like
Diego
Cristiano
Maradona
Ronaldo.
Wasn't much loved over here happened. Yeah. But I mean, I think in the same way, Ronaldo plays into his image. He has to be that arrogant, and he has to be that humourless, and he has to be machine-like. Because that's his brand. There's these CR7 boots they're selling at the minute, and it's for players who push themselves that little bit further. And it's like his focus, his determination is, I was going to say laser again, but that would be a bit of a repetitive.
He also lives up to his extraordinary self-billing. And great photo. I don't know what it actually means, but it seems to show Hugo Almeida celebrating before Ronaldo scores the goal.
Or he's just waving, "Please pass for once."
Well, no, because he's first. Yeah. No, but it was an extraordinary thing. He's just put the ball through to Ronaldo, and he's already got his arms up celebrating, even though Ronaldo is yet to shoot. Or that's what the photo looks like anyway. And they reopened the voting on the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, who'd have thought? Poor old Frank Ribery, he hasn't got a prayer now, does he? They've not only have they reopened the voting, anyone who has already voted is allowed to change their vote.
FIFA saying that's not true.
Oh, but only 27 people had voted out of how many? Is that right, 27?
They haven't released, as far as I know, they haven't released the figures, but they said voting is extended because of poor returns. But they haven't allowed people to change.
Do you get to vote, Rafa?
No. Mm. Why would I?
I thought it was journalists as well.
Yeah. Well, the Ballon d'Or used to... Oh, I see. No, hang on. The Ballon d'Or used to be, and now that it's become a FIFA assimilated
thing. It's a combination between journos and captains and national managers.
Right, okay.
But El Mundo ran the story originally that you're allowed to change your vote. The FIFA have denied it. And people who've seen the actual email that went out again to the people who can vote said it makes no mention of being able to change your vote.
Right.
Which would have been absolutely ridiculous if you think about it.
Well,
it's bad enough to say you can vote a bit longer.
If you're going to reopen the voting, why not just reopen the voting?
No, but you're not reopening the voting. You're just saying you actually haven't voted yet. Can you please vote?
Right. Well, who are these people who didn't bother to vote before the deadline?
The people who knew that Cristiano Ronaldo would not qualify.
You know what? It's just football is so badly organised that you just know that the
says the man
FA
who turned up at whole country.
Absolutely. You just know that the FA from, just to pick a country, Estonia, would have been sitting on their ballot box for weeks and weeks trying to get hold of their captain who plays somewhere abroad, who says, I'll do it tomorrow, blah, blah. And then they all forget about it.
Do you think they bother to actually contact the captain, or do they just someone writes it in?
Well, that has happened as well. Mm. I think our friend Gabriele Marcotti looked into the voting last season and found that there were some really strange irregularities going on, people picking the wrong players. Some people afterwards saying, "I never voted for this guy. Mm. The FA must have filled in for me." Yeah, it's a bit of a mess.
All right. Well, anyway, well done to Portugal. Shame for Sweden. And well done as well to Greece. 4-2 winners on aggregate over Romania. And Ronaldo-esque dominance of these two playoff matches from Konstantinos Mitroglou, who, as you probably saw, got three of the Greek four goals. People are getting very excited about this fella. Hey, Barry.
Yes, they are. Liverpool have been scouting him, sending...
Other big clubs in Europe as well.
So I believe Milan are after him, apparently. I don't know if he's any good enough, but his strike rate is pretty good.
As opposed to what? Milan have won how many European Cups and Liverpool?
It's all in the past.
I'm trying to think of a Bundesliga side that's won more than what, three? Four. Is Bayern now at four? All right, well, there's one then. Five? You're at five now. Jeepers. If reports are to be believed, he's got a price tag of only about 7 million, which given that he's had four hat-tricks already this season, he scored 14 goals in 10 league games for Olympiakos. I don't know how many in the Champions League, but he always seems to be scoring in that as well. And six in his last seven for Greece. Wow.
It's a bargain.
Jurgen Klopp was at that game as well.
The Romania
Greece
Jurgen
game. Klopp.
Oh, so maybe you think Borussia Dortmund for Lewandowski. Hey, putting it all together for you on Football Weekly Extra.
Live.
All right. Okay, and also in playoff news, delight, a triumph for Trinidad and Tobago because Croatia beat Iceland, which means that Trinidad and Tobago remain, Paul.
The smallest country ever to have played at the World Cup.
All right, at least until Gibraltar gets there.
Mm. With Danny Higginbottom in charge, anything is possible.
Yeah, well, it's actually his uncle's in charge.
He's captain, isn't he?
He's captain, probably, or something like that. Anyway, we're moving on now. We're moving on now to a little bit of music, and then England-Germany.
To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to The Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES. That's T-A-L-E-S. The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Now, a little bit more international stuff. I didn't mention, but everybody else has, and we don't really need to discuss this, but Mandzukic, getting his red card in the game against Iceland, which means that he'll maybe not even go to the World Cup, even though Croatia will, because if he gets a three-game ban, then that's the group stages. Poof, gone. Now, other news from the playoffs. Mexico beating New Zealand. Uruguay 0-0 with Jordan at Montevideo. A little bit disappointing, that one. Algeria got past Burkina Faso just on away goals. And, of course, Ghana made it past Egypt. But here's Luis Miguel Echegaray says, please mention in Football Weekly Extra, which he calls the best pod ever, that Egypt were undefeated before Ghana, whereas Mexico only won twice in their qualifying before playing New Zealand. So is it fair that the Mexicans go and Egypt have to stay behind? African qualifying is a bit...
Yeah, it's a bit tougher than CONMEBOL or whatever it is.
Whatever
the US, Mexico, and not many other people.
Bolivia.
Costa Rica.
Yeah, right. And Rob Burns says, I hope you give some mention to Bafana Bafana's incredible victory over Spain. Without a World Cup place for South Africa, it's given our fans some happiness. It's true. It's also given Victor Valdez a torn calf muscle.
So, yeah, but it never happened.
Go on.
According to FIFA.
Really?
Yeah, because Spain made seven substitutions and they were only allowed to make six. So now it's been downgraded to an exhibition match, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
So okay. So if you looked like you were facing an embarrassing defeat in a friendly, you just chuck on far too many subs.
Brilliant.
Clever.
Yep. Mm. Scotland beat Norway. He's having a good run of results, Gordon Strachan, isn't he? 0-0 with USA. Beats Norway.
Beats Croatia.
How? Oh, yeah, they did as well,
twice.
Didn't they?
Twice.
What about Japan? Speaking of beating... actually, they beat Belgium. Yeah. I'll say that again, because this is going to complete pieces. What about Japan, though, Barry?
Yeah, I mentioned last week that game could be worth watching. I proceeded to not watch it, and apparently it was great.
Right,
and there were loads of goals, as I confidently predicted.
In a 3-2 win in Belgium.
Yeah, I think that's two in the spin Belgium have lost now, which, you know, they're not particularly important games, but for this side that many people consider dark horses for the World Cup, it's a slight concern.
Yeah, minor team loses two games at home in a row. Surely that means, Barry, that they are in crisis. Right, Rafa? I'm taking this in an England-Germany direction. Mm. Boos at Wembley. Boos.
Not too many boos.
Weren't there?
No. Oh. And more of a realisation that England just are not quite at the same level yet. And I think the crowd realised there's no point booing these players because What can they do? It's not their fault that they're not quite as good.
You were there.
I was there.
Right. Did I read this right? No shots on target at all from England.
Yeah, there was a big debate afterwards because obviously Townsend hit the post and Roy Hodgson said, well, we hit the post. That's on target. And then somebody said, no, it's not. And he said, well, I rest my case. Which didn't really solve anything because statistically speaking, if you do hit the post or the bar, it's considered not on target.
Right. But that sounds fair to me. England haven't lost back-to-back games at Wembley, etc., and so on since 1977. But it's a good thing we're not playing the World Cup there anyway. So
yeah, we don't have a. I think we've the list of games, knockout games in World Cups away from Wembley, we've won since 1966.
Right.
I think there's five of them.
Out of how many?
Probably about double that amount. And the teams we've beaten are Paraguay, Belgium, Cameroon, Denmark and Ecuador.
Right, some of those teams will be at the World Cup, Paul.
Yes, they will, and we might meet them in the second round if we're lucky. I thought it was all right. I thought we were all right.
Really?
Yeah. I think you've got it. I think it really just depends on what your expectations are and where you set the level. You look at the teams, you know, the golden generation. We don't have that anymore.
Mm.
But we kept possession. We played reasonably in the midfield. We were organised.
We only lost 1-0 to Germany's reserves.
Germany's reserves with, what was it, 4 Champions League finalists in it and, you know, a golden generation of players and a team, that, a squad that have been together for a long time.
Hmm.
A lot of our players, particularly the subs who came on the second half, several of whom I thought were impressive, have only played a handful of games. It's a project. I think it was all right.
Well, some of our players got Champions League experience as well.
I'm just saying that Germany are a good side, even when they put out
the reserves. Well, we know that.
England didn't embarrass themselves. I think you're right. They did pass it around quite nicely in the first half, but it didn't generate any shot, let alone on target. I think there was one Gerrard effort in the first 45 minutes. And for England at home, you just expect a bit more. I mean, my colleagues who don't see England very frequently, they were all really, really shocked just how bad a side they were.
But they just don't know how bad we've been.
Yeah, but I mean, you say that, but then the Poland game suggested that there is a future for England and for this team. They played a lot better. Obviously, Poland also had a lot of chances and could have embarrassed them as well. But I think the main problem, I think, Hodgson is not a man with great visions and with great ideas and with a gung-ho attitude. He is very realistic about what this team can and can't do. So you end up with players who, from their Premier League identity or persona, want to play good attacking football, but as a team, Hodgson knows they can't quite do it. So he sets them up fairly reactively, and then they can get decent results in tournaments, don't concede, and maybe nick something on the break, but they can never play with the same fluidity that the best sides in world football now have.
Yeah, and we don't have the players to play like that. And I think, you know, against Poland. Compared to Germany, a very different opponent. Germany defended very well in the second half against England. There were a couple of Mats Hummels' great blocks. And if Daniel Sturridge had taken that through ball from Jordan Henderson, who played well, by the way, taken that under control and had a shot on goal, it might have been 1-1 and then these fine margins. I think we played with tempo and guts and gung-ho against Poland. And you would hope that we would do that against teams that we could overwhelm. I think you've got to have a different attitude when you're playing against, when we, England, are playing against the best sides in the world. Because if we play gung-ho, we'll get ruined.
All right. Good news, the under-21s are looking quite bright under Gareth Southgate, no?
Yeah, they
9-0 against San Marino.
Yeah, that's the record under-21 result, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they tend to do well in qualifying and then struggle in the tournaments.
Yeah.
Sorry. Had to snigger.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens. And, but, you know, again,
but nice to see Gareth Southgate doing well. No, lovely man.
I think he's probably got the right approach, a pragmatic approach too. And there's you know, that team that played in the under-21s was very different from the last under-21 squad. He's rotating those players. We've got a bigger pool of under-21s.
There's some players there you might like to see going to Rio with the seniors, eh?
Maybe, but they're not playing enough first-team games. That's the main problem, isn't it?
Some of them are.
Some of them. But, I mean,
and Ravel Morrison is. What about Luke Shaw? He is.
Yeah, Luke Shaw.
And we've not got a left-back at the moment.
We've got three.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know,
Can't we play one of them in midfield the way the Germans do?
Yeah, let's do that.
Super. All right. Rafa.
Yeah.
We're just talking about Hummels there. or Hummels, rather. Mm-hmm. He's out till January now.
Mm.
Oh, dear. Schmelzer's out for 3 weeks.
Yep.
But Hummels, with Subotic out for the season, big problems for that man Jurgen Klopp's Borussia Dortmund. Good thing they don't have a big game coming up this week. Oh, no, they do,
true.
Don't they?
Yeah. He wasn't very happy, Jurgen Klopp, and Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO, who was at the stadium at Wembley to pick up the pieces, almost, as it were. Their whole regular back four is out for this game.
No the game Subotic. Is against?
Bayern Munich on Saturday.
Bayern Munich at
no
home.
No Subotic, as you said, no Hummels, no Schmelzer, no Piszczek, and no Gundogan. He's been out for a while, but still.
Is he not on the way back?
He's on the way back, but he's on the way. He's been on the way back since late August, and it's proved to be a long, arduous way back.
Wow.
It's coming at a really bad time, and their share price, because they're publicly listed, went down 5% yesterday.
Wow.
Out of this game.
Really? Because of Hummels' injury?
It's not just Hummels, it's Schmelzer as well, and with Bayern Munich coming. I think the sense is that Bayern can provide a knockout blow if they win at Dortmund. They're 7 points clear, 4 games to go before the end of the first half of the season. Very difficult to see them give that away.
All right.
Did they fail to mind the gap on their way out to Wembley?
Oh, that's an interesting question, actually, because, of course, they went on the tube. Did you go on the tube with them, Rafa?
I didn't go on the tube with them, no.
Right. No. It's really cool, isn't it? Them, Jay-Z, everyone's on the tube.
Yeah.
I went on it.
Well, it was the obvious thing to do, because they're staying in Whitehall, which seems an odd choice of venue, but...
But it made it the obvious choice, then, the underground.
The 52-minute journey.
The underground is going 24 hours at the weekend from 2015.
Is that so?
It's very exciting news for Londoners.
I won't mention the fact that it's ironic because, you know, the English organisation sending the Germans down to the underground, whereas, you know, 50 years ago it was the Germans sending the English down to the underground.
No, it's good you didn't mention it.
What? Ta-da!
Ta-da!
Some great headlines, anyway, after the game.
Yeah, the Independent went with Deutschland Tuber Alles, which I would imagine Rafa was delighted with.
It's a wonderful headline. I mean, the pun really works. And
Mention the score. That was another one.
No, but this the Tuber Alles
one gone pear-shaped.
It's particularly bad because it was obviously a pun on the whole tube thing, but the actual piece was about how Germany and the Bundesliga is completely non-materialistic and they're all super down-to-earth and lovely guys, whereas the Premier League is full of these horrible people. And, I mean, to illustrate it with a headline or with a note that's associated with Nazi Germany and nationalistic fervour is just a really weird juxtaposition, and for me it doesn't quite work. Also, it doesn't quite work because Max Kruse drives a camouflage Bentley, you know, when he's not on the tube.
Anyone who's ever been on the tube will know that lots of very nasty people travel on it.
Really?
On a regular basis.
Well, apparently a Chinese tourist had a nervous breakdown and wouldn't stop crying because she sat next to Mario Götze.
Really?
On the tube. Yeah.
Crying?
It's quite sweet.
It's quite sad.
She got closer to him than any England defender did, though.
Oh, badum-chish. Let's have a little musical sting to savour that, and then we'll be back with the Premier League. Right. Serious face back on because the Premier League is returning to action this weekend. Patrick Avenel says, how can Switzerland be seeded above the Netherlands? Fair point. And is this the best EPL weekend ever?
To which you can say definitively, no.
Why not?
Oh, there's only a couple of games that are halfway interesting.
A couple of games? I wonder. You've got your West Midlands derby, West Brom against Aston Villa. You've got first v third with Arsenal against Saints. You've got Merseyside derby, Everton-Liverpool.
And you've got Tottenham-Man City.
And then the relegation battle. By the end of Saturday's games, you could end up with 5 of the bottom 6 within 1 point. We'll come on to that a bit later. Should we start on Merseyside?
Start on Merseyside.
Let's do that. All right. Not sure what the figures would be on minutes played and miles travelled, but Luis Suarez coming back from a long way away over in Montevideo on Wednesday night.
Nearly 7,000 miles.
Is that right, Barry?
I think his employers, the Fenway Sports Group, laid on a private jet for him.
Right. He's still got to go the distance, hasn't he?
Yeah, I don't know whether that would... what difference... travelling via private jet would make, or never having
been on a private jet, haven't you, Rafa? Have you not? Wow.
I have.
Oh, all right, Paul.
Yeah, in Thailand.
Cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Well, how did that come about?
Because my ex-wife got us blagged into some millionaire's resort.
Brilliant.
And we were on this millionaire's resort, and it was far too hot to live. Never mind enjoy yourself.
Right.
But they had a walk-in cheese freezer next to the buffet that you could go in, so all the Germans and the Brits could kind of pretend like they were eating normally.
Which I'm going billionaire. Which billionaire was this with his walk-in cheese freezer?
Oh, it was like a resort. It was kind of like the five...
It was a resort for millionaires.
Yeah, it's like the Five Senses or something like that. Right. I can't remember.
And then they...
Then they fly you back to Bangkok on a little private
jet. So they have their own little plane, but it's not... Was it one of those ones where, you know, like on Iron Man or whatever, where they got chairs facing each other with a coffee table in between?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. All right, well, that would make it a totally different travelling experience.
It was an elite travelling experience, and one I plan to repeat as soon as I've saved up the cash.
Right. Do they sell lottery tickets on it, and when you land, there's a fanfare go off?
No, but there is no pre-organised boarding. You've got to get in there and grab your chair.
Right, that's interesting. That's interesting. I reckon that a private jet for Football Weekly would work out very nicely indeed.
Going where? Exactly.
Norwich, principally.
Oh. Is that like the kind of the Jaffa Cake conversation where you mention a private jet and somebody lands one outside on the canal?
Right.
Why not?
Ooh, cool. Anyway, we were talking about Everton against Liverpool, and Liverpool have a terrific record in this fixture. They won four of their last six trips across Stanley Park in the league. I'm excited, though, to hear that Martinez could be using this young Barcelona loanee, Gerard Deulofeu.
Why not? Yeah,
who's meant to be an utter sensation. We've not seen him yet, I don't think.
He scored in the Carling Cup.
Did he? Right. Yeah. Supposedly, every time he gets left on the bench, they have to pay Barcelona more money for his loan because he's been sent to... Sorry.
No, didn't I tell you earlier?
You did tell me. Because he's been sent to play, but not to kind of sit around.
That seems like a sensible clause to insert.
Are we excited about this game at the end of the day?
Yeah, the Merseyside Derby's... generally quite an exciting affair. Everton have kept back-to-back clean sheets, and they'll struggle to do it this time because Liverpool are scoring a lot of goals, particularly since the return of a certain diminutive Uruguayan.
Mm, indeed so.
It does sound like a 0-0 draw, though, doesn't it?
I don't know.
A 12:45 kick-off, you know, one of these ones that are arranged to suit the needs of the broadcasters.
Yeah.
But and
this
it just,
broadcast it, is worth it, though.
But it just rarely gets to the peaks of tempo and gusto that you look for in the Premier League.
Right, okay. Well, Liverpool could go top, of course, depending on what happens in Arsenal's game against Southampton. Now, last time these two teams met, do you remember what the score was at the Emirates last season? 6-1 to Arsenal. It was 5-0 at half time. Yeah, exactly. What?
And was that when Nigel was still in charge?
I'm going to guess that it was.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess that it was, because Pochettino's been all about tightening it up at the back. It's a very different Southampton side now. And there they are. They lie. How many points are they behind? Is it 3 points?
They could go top of the table on Saturday. Yeah. If they beat Arsenal by more than 2 goals and Liverpool fail to beat Everton, Southampton will be top of the table.
Are they going to do it, Barry?
Probably not, because I think Liverpool will beat Everton.
All right, but are they going to get their end of the bargain?
It's unlikely, isn't it? But Arsenal going into this game, still stinging from their defeat against Manchester United, it's going to be tough for them. Mm. Southampton are not easy to beat, not easy to score against.
It's the kind of game that has handbrake written all over it, at least for the first 45 minutes, from an Arsenal point of view, I think. After international week, Wilshire out again, I think. Mm. They might struggle a little bit to get into the rhythm.
Cool. We haven't mentioned Man City Spurs yet. And it's interesting because behind Arsenal, you've got everyone from second place Liverpool to seventh place Spurs within 3 points of each other. And they're just a point below Spurs and Man City in eighth place to Spurs seventh. And they take each other on, Man City Spurs. This is a big game.
Especially for Spurs, I think, after their terrible defeat against Newcastle.
Well, was it terrible? If you're going to lose, is it not better to lose when the opposition goalie has a worldie?
No.
Okay.
No. They created chances, and perhaps more chances than in other games. What?
It is. Clearly, you've done good job. When the other that's when managers come off, they say, yeah, but the other fella, he'll never have a game like that.
The odd efforts on goal, didn't they?
Yeah, it was crazy. Would you rather be Spurs losing 1-0 against that Tim Krul-inspired Newcastle, or Man City losing to Sunderland again?
yeah, of course, it's worse being Man City losing to Sunderland. I agree with that.
I mean, Sunderland, Barry, come on. Anyway, Raph, back to your point.
So, no, I mean, I think Spurs are flattered to deceive. They brought in all these great individuals, but still haven't been able to make them into a team. And whenever I see them, they're just so underwhelming as a side. Yes, they did create chances against Newcastle, I agree with you. But you never get the sense, or very rarely get the sense, under AVB, that they're actually playing together. They're sort of individual guys doing their individual thing. Townsend doing his thing. Soldado waiting for balls that never arrive. And I think it's about time they clicked.
Yeah, I mean, is it a case of them waiting, about to click, or is it the case that they don't necessarily have the right attributes to convert those chances? Because then, you know, some of them were great saves, other of them weren't, you know, clear-cut opportunities as they might have been.
Right. Man City may be looking the likeliest side here, given that, A, Eriksen's out for a month, got injured on international duty, and Man City are playing at home. And we all know that they're bobbins on the road, but pretty hot stuff.
But again, you know, Eriksen's played okay, but he hasn't become the fulcrum of the team that many thought he would do instantly when he tore Norwich to shreds.
Right, no company, no Vincent company.
Oh, well, that makes a difference.
Man U Cardiff, or Cardiff Man U. Man U closing in on the top. 4 wins in the last 5 in the Premier League. Traditionally, at this point, I predict they're going to come unstuck at Cardiff, and then they'll go and get a result. What's going to happen, though?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because Cardiff are so inconsistent. So, on the face of it, you'd just expect Manchester United to win, and fairly comfortably. But would it be a massive shock if Cardiff turned them over? No.
I don't think it would. But then that's what I always say. Yeah. Is Robin van Persie going to play? Because he had toe and groin injuries, which kept him out of Holland's friendlies. I don't know if I'm employing rabbit ears on those toe and groin injuries.
United are the world-class experts in the small niggling injury and friendlies department.
For anyone who missed recent podcasts, we've been discussing how managers often, you know,
like
would
defectives.
Fit. Right, exactly. And we said nobody seems to be like Colombo. But hey, James Frayne and Bernard Shakey beg to differ. They say Wander Ramos with a Macintosh. Bingo.
Yeah.
Like that.
Good shot.
Dane McGowan says, can't believe you've discussed managers that look like fictional detectives for 2 podcasts without saying Wenger and Miss Marple. And on a similar note...
He's more like an older Inspector Gadget.
I'm not sure about that.
Especially with that long quilted coat.
I like the Miss Marple. But what do you think of this? Hairy Bat, Steve Bruce as Jessica Fletcher. That might just win.
Do you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Have you done Sam Allardyce as Poirot, if he had the...
Wow. That's
he used to have a moustache.
I bet he'd get respect then if he was called Poirot and had a little moustache.
Yeah, he probably would have got a top job by now.
Okay, those were the posts. Pretty special, weren't they? How about then this relegation battle? Now, as I say, Saturday could end up with 5 of the bottom 6 within 1 point of each other. Key game in this is Stoke-Sunderland, because if Sunderland, who are coming off those victories, you know, was in the derby and then against Man City, if they win at Stoke, then they'll both be on 10 points. If Chelsea beat West Ham, you can see that happening, then West Ham stay on 10 points. Fulham are on 10 points already. They're playing Swansea at home, so they're unlikely to budge too far from that. Norwich?
11 points.
Are they going to be at Newcastle?
Yes.
So they could quite easily be on 11 points. So, ergo... There you go.
Where are the Swans on right now?
The Swans, I think, are on 13. Hang on a second, Swansea. They're on 12, so they're not far off. That's an interesting... Well, do you want to start with that, then?
Swansea are playing Fulham.
Yeah, at Fulham. Fulham, yeah, I know what you're going to say, but bear in mind that Rennie Meulensteen's there. Yeah, and he's been making them pick an animal and go out and be that animal in training. And I know you're going to laugh, and you've already got that ironic smile on, but I reckon that stuff works.
In what way does it work?
It just...
There you go.
Exactly.
So you're trying to tell me that...
They weren't allowed to be snakes, though.
What was Dimitar Berbatov?
I don't know.
Gerbil.
I don't know what he was.
Sloth.
But one was a tiger. One was certainly
Scotty
an
Parker.
Elephant.
Scotty Parker.
Really?
Tiger.
Do you reckon?
It sounds like.
Could be. Anyway, so we'll see what... Because they're going to be playing the Swans this weekend. Right. Anyway, that's Fulham Swansea. Fulham have lost their last three, conceding nine.
I'm sorry, you still haven't explained why you think...
It works.
It works.
I don't know.
It sounds like some really naff thing you'd have to do on a management course, training course. Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been on a management training course, Baz? I suspect you haven't.
They're actually
a lot more interesting than you give them
credit
for.
I was on one, yeah.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
If you get to pretend to be an animal, that's all right by me.
The one I was on was really funny, actually. It was quite entertaining, but entirely useless.
Right. All right, well, we'll see, eh? We'll see who's right about the animal antics. Norwich at Newcastle. Go on, Paul.
Yeah, I mean... Big game for Chris Hughton. I had this great experience in a pub on the Caledonian Road watching the West Ham game.
Crikey.
Where I was surrounded by really raucous West Ham fans who were very gentlemanly towards me, to a man.
Ooh.
But there was also a guy, a Geordie, waiting for a train who claimed to be Paul Lambert's opposition scout.
Oh.
And he started giving me the whole chapter and verse on how terrible everything was at Norwich apart from Paul Lambert.
Right.
And so as I was thinking about the lagers, I was having a very interesting, increasingly interesting conversation.
Right.
None of the details I can probably share here.
Okay. Was he convincing about this business of everything being terrible there?
Yeah, I think he was to a certain extent.
Right.
But we played well in that second half. And I think it's an awful lot to do with belief. And I think we might go out there, set up a defensive stall for the first time this season and maybe nick a point.
All right, if your players just go out there and embrace their inner canary, I'm thinking...
That's right. It's about believing in yourself, but not too much.
Yeah. Cool. And Newcastle, well, they have had those two surprising wins, 2-0 against Chelsea and 1-0 against Spurs. So
they might start believing themselves too much, you see.
Right.
That's what might happen.
Okay. Oh, look, Hull Palace. Still no new name at Palace and still no new name at Hull.
Pool is closing in, though, apparently, in advanced talks.
Yeah, but that's what, 4 weeks they've been looking for a manager?
That's why they've advanced.
Steve Parrish was on myself and Max Rushton's radio show on Sunday.
There you go.
And he told us that we could manage Palace for one game.
All right. And did you take him up on that?
Well, I suspect he may have been humouring us, but I fully intend to turn up in Hull with my suit on Saturday lunchtime.
Well, how will that work?
Max can't make... Max has to... Plays football after soccer.
Great start already to the career.
So he can't get there till half time. So
right.
I have to pick the team, give the team talk. He's doing the half time team talk and taking the plaudits afterwards when we win.
Would you be a suit guy or a tracksuit guy?
A suit, definitely. Yeah.
Mm. All right. It's an interesting game, this one. Yeah.
I feel sorry for Palace. I've said, I'm just repeating myself now, but they have played well in recent games since Holloway left.
Mm-hmm.
They played well against Arsenal, probably should have got a point, should have beaten Everton, but their awful profligacy in front of goal cost them, and they're probably due a break.
Right, okay. Meantime at Hull, Mike tweets saying owner Esemelam now encouraging fans to stay away if they don't like his name change. Interesting that, isn't it? Because
Yeah,
you're big on the whole idea of fans voting with their feet. And he's actively encouraging them to not turn up if they don't like the idea.
I'm not sure that's a great idea on his part, but it'll be interesting to see if they take him up on his offer.
All right, we'll see about Palace, because who knows if they might not get a lease point here. Because up front for Hull, Sonny Luko's out till January, which means Danny Graham, who's... How many years is it now since he scored a Premier
League goal? I think it was 18-24.
Okay. Right. West Ham, Chelsea... I'm finishing off on Stoke Sunderland, Barry. That's the big one. West Ham, Chelsea. They're in trouble, aren't they, West Ham?
They are in trouble.
They are.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Mm. Only 1-10.
And they've got a shocking injury list. Sorry, I wrote it down. All the players they've out injured. Joey Bryan, Mladen Petric, Matthew Taylor, Razvan Rat, Winston Reid, Andy Carroll, Abu Diarra, and Ricardo Vazte all injured.
Right. Okay.
But you've just got that. I mean, just increasingly, that decision to buy Andy Carroll just looks ridiculous.
Spot on.
Right. What about Chelsea then? Because they've not had the best time of it.
No.
Narrowly scraped past West Brom.
No, they haven't. And you know, what West Ham have been doing quite well this season is fronting up to this kind of the bigger teams and stifling them.
Could they do what they did to Spurs against Chelsea, do you think?
If they're at home.
Yeah, they are at home.
Yeah, well, I think not, because that's the kind of thing, you know, they caught them on the break a couple of goals.
Yeah, but why can't you just play, if you're playing a big, if you're West Ham in the middle of an injury crisis and Chelsea come to town, it's not like you're going to go, well, we're at home, we've got to go out and play. No, you're just going to sit back and soak it up.
Yeah, and the fans will go, what are you doing? Come on, score a goal,
Do you not think in their position with Chelsea being the big team that they are, that they might...
Have you been to a football ground recently? I mean, that's what fans want. They want Barcelona and they want 5-0
goals. I'm calling you out.
All right.
Yeah, I have.
West Ham fans are notoriously patient and tolerant of their team's shortcomings. But West Ham's home record is awful. Chelsea's away record isn't very good. So something's going to have to give.
I don't think I'm being naive to suggest that they might well set up to play the same way they did away at Spurs in this game.
They probably will. The problem is that the way they are set up, they need the players up front who can do something with these long balls that are coming their way, and they don't really have that at the moment.
Wasn't just long balls. There was stuff like people running at sluggish defenders. Yeah. I just think you could run at Chelsea's back line. You might get something out of it.
I know, but if you are very deep, it's very difficult to then run at people if they're 60 metres ahead of you.
Mel Morrison
it's
did.
Just, yeah, I know, in training.
It no, just, he did against Spurs too.
Yeah, he did. It just takes a lot of effort. I think it's going to be very tough. I feel Chelsea, even with a half-hearted performance, as they very often put in these days, will be too strong.
And actually, when they play without a striker, they're playing with four players in the final third, which actually does leave you quite open to the counter-attack.
Right, interesting. Well, we're going to finish off then, because we've got to leave the pod. We have to leave the pod. We're going to finish off with Stoke Sunderland. So, is the run going to continue? Will the Black Cats roar again?
Hopefully. Lee Cattermole will be back from suspension to give them added bite in midfield until he probably gets sent off again. And Andre De Sena is back. I mean, they've won two of their last three league games. The one they lost, they did well in. You know, they played with nine men for 45 minutes and played well with the nine men, didn't concede a goal. So, you know, I'd chalk that up as a moral victory. And... yeah, Stoke aren't very good. So
they've had 4 points from the last 24 available.
Yeah, whoa. They're not very good.
Stoke.
That is... And they've... I don't know how many goals they've scored, but not many. They don't concede many at the Britannia, but still, I think Sunderland might fancy their chances.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, listeners, it's been an adventure together, hasn't it? Through the wide world of international football and the Premier League as well. But now, with weary wings, we come back...
I'm just being an eagle.
Oh, you're being an eagle,
yeah, sorry.
Rafa. Right.
Did I misunderstand something?
A German eagle?
Are we not supposed to do that?
No, we can do. And Paul, you're being what?
I'm being a lion.
Ah, that's not a lion, I don't think. You, sir, are an elephant, Barry.
Yes.
Yay.
Not sure to
super. I'm going to go away and think about all of that and practice in private. And then have a super weekend, or hope it goes well for you. We'll be back on Monday. Bye.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.